Tonight, one of the things that I want to talk about is simply the quality of mindfulness itself. And that's primarily what I am in my teaching, is a mindfulness teacher. And one of the things that I come across in my trainings and my classes is the simple kind of misconception that people have about what it is that they're actually doing, what I call the conceptual way of acting or perceiving. One of the kind of simple things that comes up all the time is one of our trainings. We start off by teaching people how to breathe and breathe with their diaphragm like you would if you were taking a singing lesson. And so what the science tells us about breathing is that if we breathe into our chest, that we stimulate the release of stress hormones. And it doesn't matter, we could be sitting in a room like this and very comfortable, very happy, but if we happen to be in the habit of breathing, moving our diaphragm up into our chest, it signals the body to release stress hormones. And when we actually breathe down into our diaphragm, that it stimulates, it's a signal that stimulates our body to say, okay, we can relax now. You can really let go. And you've heard this over and over again in yoga classes and in all kinds of anything that you've done that's involved mindfulness or this type of practice. But when you really look at people and we really go around the room, 90% of the people are breathing here and thinking they're breathing into their belly. So the concept is you're taking a deep, relaxing breath. The reality is that you just induce a stress reaction in your body. And most of the people are really trained to breathe that way for some reason, which when you think about it, it doesn't make much sense. But if you look at a baby, they really breathe in their belly. And something throughout life shifts people to breathe more up into their chest. So we get in the habit of our diaphragm going up when we breathe in instead of going down when we breathe in. But what this kind of points out is the difference that there is in what we might be truly practicing or doing as opposed to what we think we're doing. All the people that I work with initially, they think they're taking a very deep, relaxing breath. And so they'll breathe deeper and higher and actually stimulate more adrenaline and never kind of make the connection and observe directly what this is bringing about in their own bodies. And so if you think about all the different ways that we use and have concepts about things. We have concepts about ourselves. We might have a concept that if we want to, there's something in our heart that we really want to do, that we could come up with the concept that we're too old to do that, that somehow we're not skilled enough to do that, that we didn't have the right opportunities or we don't really have the right training. There's so many ways that we create concepts about ourselves that are just concepts. They're not the reality, they're not the truth, they're not our experience. So when we think about all the ways that concepts can, in a way, create delusion about ourselves, about our environment, about our world around us, that we can look to mindfulness to kind of clear up and help us gain true insight into our experience or what we're doing or what's so. One of the techniques that I think is very useful in this is when we recognize that we can listen, observe, or investigate by using our senses in a way that is kind of the most raw, basic way that we can sense things. In other words, as we're sitting here and we're hearing sounds that we might hear a car go by. Now, logically, we might think that if we could really tune in and tell what kind of car it was, what kind of engine that was, you know, what year that was, that somehow that would be more skillful than what we do in mindfulness, which is to just notice the arising of a vibration that comes to us and that we recognize as sound, and it arises and passes away. And we really don't have to add anything to that. It's just at its rawest level of sound arise. Because we have the faculty to experience sound, we experience that, and it passes away. And the same thing with all our senses, including in this practice, the thought sense, which is considered the sixth sense. Instead of kind of being focused on our thoughts as such real concrete objects, that in mindfulness we can just notice the arising, the formation of a thought form, and passing away. And kind of soften our focus on the content of that. As a matter of fact, we can actually let go of the content and just notice the arising and passing. And so what this does is it supports us in letting go of our concepts of things and actually investigating through the raw experience, through our senses of hearing, tasting, smelling, and thinking. So, in a way, it's counterintuitive until you really examine that quality itself of the fact that it supports us and aids us into being direct with our experience without our thoughts about it. And how often do we ever have experiences in our ordinary life where we don't add a million thoughts to it? And we do it so quickly, so easily, so unconsciously, that we don't realize that we've just altered the whole experience through our mental processing. And that this takes a lot of energy, and it causes a lot of confusion, and causes a lot of misunderstanding of ourselves and our environment. So mindfulness kind of supports us if we can drop into this bare attention where we just notice the arising and passing of various experiences. One of the things I wanted to read and I brought with me is kind of a definition of mindfulness that is in the book The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. And I think he does a really excellent job of kind of defining this quality of mindfulness. It's called Entering the Now. Break the old pattern of present moment denial and present moment resistance. Make it your practice to withdraw the attention from the past and future whenever they are not needed. Step out of the time dimension as much as possible in everyday life. If you find it hard to enter the now directly, start by observing the habitual tendency of your mind to want to escape from the now. You will observe that the future is usually imagined as either better or worse than the present. If the imagined future is better, it gives you hope or pleasurable anticipation. In other words, if your concept of the future is it's going to be great, you get excited and hopeful and leads to a very pleasurable experience. If it is worse, your concept of it being worse creates anxiety. Both are illusionary. Both are illusionary. Through self-observation, more presence comes into your life automatically. The moment you realize you are not present, you are present. Whenever you are able to observe your mind, you are no longer trapped in it. Another factor has come in, something that is not of the mind, the witnessing presence. Be present as the watcher of your mind, of your thoughts and emotions, as well as your reactions in various situations. Be at least as interested in your reaction as in the situation or person that causes you to react. I'm going to read that again. Be at least as interested in your reactions as in the situation or person that causes you to react. Notice how often your attention is in the past or future. Don't judge or analyze what you observe. Watch the thought. Feel the emotion. Observe the reaction. Don't make a personal problem out of them. You will then feel something more powerful than any of those things that you observe. The still observing presence itself, behind the content of your mind, the silent watcher. Now, one of the lines in that, every once in a while, in my life, I read something and it just almost something clicks in. It just makes sense. And one of the lines in that was being more interested in my own response or reaction to an event or an experience rather than focusing my attention on what I perceive as the cause of that, the outward cause. Now, my concept, when I kind of started to bring this into a practice for myself, it became a personal practice. So when something arose in life, instead of, oh, that, da-da-da, or boy, they, you know, it's what's going on inside of me? What's inside here? What is this bringing up? What is this touching? And what I came up against in this practice was, again, the concept. A lot of times there was the concept that I was focusing in and paying attention. But then when I really looked at, there was still a lot of attention on what was going on out there. And so I saw that there was a schism between what I was actually practicing and what I had thought I practiced in this practice, or thought I was practicing, which allowed me to deepen the practice and bring it more into really what's going on in here. You know, something in my family upset me, my kids, my, you know, wife, or something was going on. It became, okay, what's going on inside of me? What do I feel here? What's this touching? And it became a really beautiful practice. It's really empowering to do that because it kind of puts you in touch with where your source of healing is. It's really not about what's going on out there, but it's what's going on inside yourself. And I really, the initial step of this practice was recognizing that I thought I was doing that, but I really wasn't. I really wasn't. And so that became part of the practice. If you think about other places in your life, you know, that you want to practice, different ways that you want to bring mindfulness into your life, and you look at kind of the way that you think that you're doing something as opposed to what you're actually doing. Let's say in communication, listening. How many times are you ever really letting the words in, letting yourself feel that, and then looking and seeing what your response should be? Do you, and it kind of seeing if you really understood what the person is saying? Or how often are you, as the person's talking, preparing your rebuttal to what they're saying? So communication is another avenue to look at the concept. Am I really communicating here? Am I really listening? Am I really letting in what the person's saying, doing my part in this? Or am I so busy trying to put out what I want to put out, what I want to say, what's important to me? And so what I think I'd like to do is kind of put it out to a discussion of looking at different ways to incorporate mindfulness into your life and different ways that you might see that you're thinking you're doing it, but when you really look, you can hone in and become more skillful in truly practicing mindfulness in that particular area of your life. So kind of let's open it up to a discussion of practice, personal practice, we call it. Yes.
Well, I've been playing tennis with my mom for many, many years, and I always thought we were having a good match. You know, it was fun. We were both having a lot of fun. It never occurred to me that I was always hitting the ball too hard, and it was hurting her elbow. You know, she wasn't having as much fun as I was having. So then I started meditating around the age of 19, and slowly I started to realize there's such a thing as social tennis. And then when I started hitting the ball softer, we had longer rallies, and I realized, okay, now we're both having fun. So I don't know if that qualifies, but that's kind of something that I realized over time. You know, I thought we were having fun, but I realized that only I was having fun, and then eventually it got to the point where I could play social tennis, and it didn't matter about, winning didn't matter. So that's my experience.
All right, great. I like that story because I just came here from playing tennis. But you can see where, as you paid attention in the practice of mindfulness, that you could see, well, how this was impacting the other person. And that there was another way to do it, that you could both have fun and connect. Great.
One of the things that I've tried that seems to work to bring that experience back, I liked what was written or what you said, that that's the moment that you realize that you've drifted away from it, you're back there. And so if you can sort of get to that point more easily, so I'll find cues. And one of the cues that does reoccur often is whenever something happens that I don't like. Happens every day that things happen that I don't like. And somehow if I can connect into that, it gets me back to that place and it dissipates whatever the suffering is. If there's any real suffering going on, it helps to dissipate it there. Another thing is simply going through a door can be a reminder. There are all sorts of things. And that works for me.
Another aspect of this. Is there anybody else? Yes.
I'd just like to comment that how incredibly difficult it is to be aware of something you're not aware of. And it's only when you catch a glimpse, it's sort of when you first hear yourself recorded. You think you sound a certain way, and then you hear a recording of yourself, and you go, oh my God, I don't sound like that. But you do, or whatever. We or I constantly are tricking myself into thinking one thing when who knows if it's another. I mean, you really sometimes you know, but when do you know? Sort of a bit of a qualm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The mind is so skillful at delusion that I've just heard of this. I know when Jon Kabat-Zinn came and gave a talk last year, I wasn't able to attend it. But he showed some videos. There's some kind of, I guess, well-known videos going around where they did an experiment and they had a basketball game playing and everybody's watching the basketball game and they have a guy in a gorilla suit come out in the middle of the game. And people are watching and paying attention to the game and they don't see the video. They don't see the man in a gorilla suit come out. And as it pointed to them afterwards, all of a sudden they go, oh my God, how did I not see that? There's another very similar thing where they take pilots and they have them doing a simulated landing and they have a 747 in the middle of the landing strip. And the pilots don't see that as they're going through their practice because the mind, it's not supposed to be there. And so the mind will literally eliminate certain things from your vision or from your awareness or add things. And so it points to how powerful we can build concepts of things and create all kinds of images and solidity around these concepts. We see this with what's referred to as cognitive dissonance, somebody who's very into a kind of a religious philosophy or is one way that this comes out a lot. And this is the year Y2K, I have a cousin who, you know, was sure when the Y2K came that the world was going to blow up and she was stockpiling food and things to prepare for this. And when it doesn't happen, instead of saying, oh, my beliefs were wrong, gee, I better reevaluate, the mind actually will create a stronger reason why what they believe is true. And this is referred to as cognitive dissonance. And so if we're really going to be skillful practitioners, I think it's important to recognize the power of creating concepts of things being this way or that way, or ourselves being this way or that way. Certainly in our growth and our spiritual growth as well as our psychological growth, that the ability to really see what we're doing, what our actions are causing, what our words are really impacting other people, whether they're unkind words or just thoughtless words that somehow is not accurately getting over what we're feeling. The skill of mindfulness is a practice to support us in becoming more accurate and seeing ourselves more clearly is, I think, a wonderful tool to life and a wonderful use of mindfulness itself. Another thing that's mentioned here that is also, I think, a beautiful tool of mindfulness is the ability to not be, let's say if your intention is to be totally focused and you want to stay totally on your breath, but you're having one of those practices where the mind is just going all over the place. There's just no way to tame that. Well, is that sitting necessarily a failure, or is there a way to orient ourselves to have that be just as fruitful and connected a practice as any practice? And that's what he was mentioning in this, if we're not able to enter the now directly, start by observing the habitual tendency of the mind to want to escape from the now. So I call this kind of stepping back, that the wonderful thing about mindfulness practice is that if we can kind of simplify our senses to our rawest experience of just arising and passing of various phenomena of sensation. And if we're having difficulty with that, we can step back and observe our difficulty. And we can observe the difficulty from a more still place that's not embodied by the difficulty. And so I think what the practice simply requires us to do is to be present enough to make a choice of how we're observing our experience. And that's kind of what I think is the most powerful attribute that we have as human beings, is the ability to choose. The ability to choose how we're observing, where we're observing from, and how we're tuning in and investigating the moment. Even if we find ourselves having difficulty in being in the moment, we can step back and investigate the difficulty, or notice or experience that at its rawest level, without judging, without adding to it, without making it good or bad. I mean, it's quite a freedom to be able to do that in a way. It's quite a freedom to let go of concepts, to simply enter the rawest nature of our moment. A good image that we have nowadays is that we're all, you know, interacting with computers all the time and taking digital photos, and we know that we get these cameras with more and more megapixels. Each pixel is a dot. And if you really kind of blow up more and more and more, there's just these series of dots. And in a way, in our mindfulness practice, that what we're doing is we're kind of going to that level where we're experiencing the dots again. And instead of experiencing, you know, the picture and our concepts of that picture. So, again, opening up for a few comments. How many people feel that in their practice, let's say their practice tonight, as things came up, as the cars were going by, or as your mind went off into some sort of spin, that you were able to recognize it and basically knew how to hold yourself in that moment to bring yourself back to the practice that you wanted to do? Yes. Huh?
You said you started with...
Oh, you're just raising your hand to say you did? Okay. Did you want to comment on that? Or?
Yes, because my mind was constantly wandering back and forth. And I knew I was doing it. And I kept trying to bring me back to breathing again and paying attention to what was going on. But it happened constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found myself kind of nodding off, too. And happened, you know, come on, wake up. Got to back in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what do you see from what we're talking about? Maybe a way to have that be going on and yet still be practicing with awareness.
I was aware.
Mm-hmm. Did you know that you were aware of that?
No.
Right. Okay. And that might be kind of the last step to in mindfulness practice, the kind of name tonight is I call it completing the circuit. It's doing something and knowing that you're doing it. Okay. The analogy of this is reading. And in reading, we're looking at the page, and if our mind's off somewhere else, you're not really reading. When your really mind's focused and you're really engaged in the book and the story, your mind's present, there's a complete circuit of awareness there. And then the whole reading is totally different. And actually there was an article in the paper the other day how difficult it's becoming people to stay focused on a page. And maybe because of all our you know, switching the television and everything, that we're having more and more trouble of staying focused, staying present, staying in continuous attention. But what we can practice is that in a situation like yours, if you're watching yourself going all over the place, but you're stepping back and you're watching yourself, and you're holding yourself with kindness. You don't have to beat yourself up. You don't have to make yourself wrong. You don't have to add anything to that. You can just observe and be interested in that, and know that that's where your focus is. Know that that's where your interest is. And have that be okay. It's wonderful. I'm observing having trouble staying focused on anything. And then you start to recognize that the part of you that's watching that is still and is focused. That's the place that you can begin to cultivate mindfulness. That doesn't require you to be any special way. It doesn't require you to be ahead of yourself or different than you are. Mindfulness is a come-as-you-are party. It's come-as-you-are. It's just being willing to be with yourself and really recognize, truly recognize where you are at this moment. Yes?
Actually, I feel that when I'm absorbed in a book, I am not completing the circle. As you say, I'm not aware that I'm absorbed in the book, because it's like my mind is spinning, but the spinning is not of my mind, but the story has been given to me. I feel that I am most aware that I'm reading is when I'm reading the newspaper, and not a very good one like the San Jose Mercury News, because I'm really aware that I'm taking the time to read, so that I'm sort of scanning, and anything, once I sort of get the gist, I want to move on, and so I finish. I know it's not worth my while to get absorbed in any particular story, but I'm really aware that I'm reading, I'm spending the time, and how I want to spend that time.
Mm-hmm. When you're reading newspaper or when you're reading something pleasant?
When I'm reading the newspaper, I'm really aware that I'm reading. When I'm reading a good novel that I'm absorbed in, I'm not at all aware. I feel that I am there in the scene. I am in the scene. You know, suppose it's, you know, whatever. There's a dance going on, then, you know, being described. I'm reading kind of old style novel right now. And so I'm there, you know, in that dress, in that gown, and I'm sitting probably in one of the chairs, and I'm watching. I'm not aware I'm reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that's not unusual.
Well, it sounds wonderful, actually. But if you pay attention, the typical person will not be that much absorbed. They'll read for a little bit, and then their mind will go off somewhere else, and their eyes will still go down the page. And you might even turn a page, and at some point you wake up and realize that you haven't been reading. So if you're that absorbed in the book and you're staying there, then that's a wonderful concentration. It's a wonderful skill to have, yeah.
I was just going to kid you and say, I don't think you've read a good book lately.
Maybe not. Yes?
I have this similar experience in painting. I'm more captured in the moment when I'm painting, doing watercolor, than when I'm actually sitting. The absorption state is at a much higher level, mm-hmm. and I don't feel as many distractions. I'm just like right there with mm-hmm. the experience. Yeah. The other point is with some of these uncomfortable states that we, or when we're trying to stay focused on meditation and we hear a sound or we start fantasizing, what works for me is just kind of almost like an invitation for them to come in, share that space for a while, and then, you know, let them go and just welcome the next thing in and letting it go, and sort of like a swinging back and forth. Mm-hmm. Doesn't always work, but sometimes that works.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what I'd like to do is, let's finish with a 10-minute sitting. Okay? And what I invite you to do is to incorporate whatever might be useful to you into your practice of observing your own experience. Use the sounds around you, notice the arising and passing, and really underneath it all, see if you can hold yourself with the greatest care and kindness. So let's enjoy observing ourselves.